Welcome to Close Quarters with me, Luciana Berger.
And me, Rebecca Simon.
We are so excited to be with you today. It's our 10th episode of our podcast.
It's a milestone. It's an achievement.
It's a massive achievement. And it's been like our project. It's been the thing I'll kind of go to. In part, we often start these conversations talking about the things that have got us through. But if I reflect on these 10 episodes, they've certainly been something that have got me through these tricky times. How about you?
I couldn't agree with that sentiment more, actually. And they have been, I'd say, a labour of love. I don't think that's quite the right expression because it hasn't felt onerous. But, you know, we've worked hard at this. This doesn't come from nothing. And it's actually something that I've, A, tremendously enjoyed doing. And it has given a really lovely alternative focus to some otherwise pretty bleak and monotonous weeks that have gone by, I should say. And I've really enjoyed doing it. I've really learned a lot from it. We've spoken to some incredible people that has been really interesting and inspiring in equal measure. Yeah, totally. It's totally got me through.
I should say that we haven't yet, during these nine previous episodes, mentioned that we have someone that always lurks on the line as we record, our wonderful producer Rich, who's also enabled us to get through and to deliver what we've shared with you over these last 10 episodes.
Do you think he's going to edit that bit out, or are we going to be able to keep that in as a, oh, Rich, gonna done it without you, man?
I was just kind of reflecting on, you know, all the different people that we've spoken to, I don't think we perhaps even anticipated in advance of putting this together. It's going to be a very organic process, just the variety and the interesting things that we've heard from all the lovely people that have very kindly agreed to join us for these previous nine sessions.
Yeah, and we're gonna go on and talk a little bit about that and some of our reflections on this time, because we're not having a conversation with anyone else today. It's just me and Luciana taking a moment to think about some of the things that we've heard, the lessons that we've learned, but also how far we've come and what maybe the future holds, because obviously this is also us recording a few days before our 40th birthdays, but more of that to come. And before we get into any of that, let's just start with our daily check-in. Luciana, how are you? That's kind of got a bit of light poetic. Luciana, how are you? Going to build on that.
I'm looking forward to seeing how the poem might evolve and develop. My mood is often influenced by the weather. I'm standing here, I can see some sunshine, that really, really helps. Although I'm like a bit miffed that like we're in May now and it's been so cold. I had hailstones yesterday, and what on earth is going on with this weather? Obviously we know that climate change is... it's got, you know, a lot to say for why we're experiencing these colder months. I joined you today having gone out last night. For what feels like the first kind of like social evening engagement ever that without my husband. You know, if I think about just over the past year, I can't recall it, like being out. Like I was out with the two girlfriends. We were it was pretty cold. I'm not going to lie, but you know, we wrapped up really warm. We were in like an outdoor dining area. Yeah. We had a meal, we had a chit chat, we laughed, like everyone else was really enjoying themselves. It just felt like really normal for the first time in, you know, a really, really long time, like well over a year. So I mean, I suppose there was lulls, wasn't there, last summer, but I didn't, you know. When we were allowed out.
I know, but
out.
I think last summer when we went out, and I agree with that, because it's very easy to sort of summarize the year, but actually there were moments in the summer where we could do things like this. But I think because we hadn't been deprived of it for so long at that point, I don't know about you, but I didn't do loads of that eat out to help out stuff. I didn't go out that much last summer that I remember. I didn't feel like the need for it, but it's the kind of cumulative effect of having had two subsequent lockdowns and yes. This last one feeling so long and at times so bleak and miserable that actually yes. The doing it now as we're coming out is much more meaningful and is much more impactful than I found it was, you know, when I went out for drinks in July and August last year, which I don't really remember feeling particularly anything about. So they've just either I did or I didn't.
Yeah, I mean, I literally can only recall going out on two other occasions, if I think about it now. But, you know, I didn't like run to do it because I don't think at any moment did I ever anticipate that this was going to go on for so long. I mean, I remember when you know, back in March when first had the lockdown, I had like a children's party organised for my then what would just turned 1 and 3 year old for their party. And I remember I rescheduled it from March to June because we thought it was going to last a few weeks.
Yeah.
and we just didn't know what to expect or what was coming. And even, I think even with the subsequent lockdowns, you know, I still kind of went into it with the aspiration that it was going to kind of lift sooner than it did. And I feel like now that, you know, hopefully we really are out the other side, but never in my wildest dreams did I think last March that we would be in May going into June before things started to resume some semblance of normality or real normality.
Absolutely. After having really been like 6 months, what, since like October, November, that things have really been on hold. And that's a significant period of time. You know, there's been big chunks of homeschooling and like literally not going anywhere. And the weather's been obviously winter and been miserable. So yes, I think it does make a massive difference now. Some of these things like going out, reconnecting with friends that you haven't seen, just sitting around having a coffee or a drink or going out for dinner suddenly feels like quite a big deal. But you've also done something else this week that you should update us on your daily check-in. You have started Couch to 5K.
I have, yes. I just did it. I didn't have to psych myself up for it. I just, you know, Sunday evening, Alistair, my husband, was doing some work. So I was like, I didn't need to do work at that time. So I just threw on a t-shirt and some leggings and I got out and I went round and round in the same block because it was kind of getting dark and didn't really fancy some gradients, some hills. And interestingly, I passed the same woman at least on three occasions as we kind of went round the block, round the loop. Right. And she certainly kept me motivated because we were passing at the same time. So I was like, I'm not awful because she's running as well. And
how did you find it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to lie. My limbs hurt for a number of days afterwards. Muscles I haven't used for quite a while. I enjoyed it more than I thought I was going to. And it was actually great to listen to some fun music while doing it. And I want to carry on doing it. So I'm glad that, you know, it took me a while to kind of really muster up the courage and the energy and the enthusiasm to do it. But having embarked on it, looking forward to, in fact, this evening, doing it again.
Good for you. And I have to say, now that I'm like a few weeks ahead of you, only like 2 or 3 weeks ahead of you, not that many. You do kind of get back into it again and it takes a while, but actually I've been persevering with it and I'm kind of just starting to get to a point where it's, my heart is not literally filled with dread. I know what I've got to do. I know what I can do. It's just such a clever app because it's a very manageable build. So I've been quite enjoying that as well. Although I have actually found it quite difficult to get out in these last few days because every time I thought, right, I'm going to go for a run, the heavens have opened and I've just been a bit, yeah. I've just been a bit pathetic about it, and rather than being like, "Oh, I'll get wet and it won't matter," I've been like, "Oh, I'll get wet, it matters, I won't go." But I'll rein it back in, hopefully, with a few brighter days to come, and then I'll get back on track on that as well.
Yeah, I mean, certainly precipitation is not a motivating factor. But what I would say is, I've mentioned before that I live literally opposite a gym, and seeing all the people go in the gym is, you know, makes me feel a bit guilty. They've just started like bringing out the spinning bikes, like into the car park, just when it's time to put my children to bed, at around 7 o'clock in the evening, like music, like pumping. But what I see is, when I look out my window, is a collection of people that clearly are, like, you know, absolutely committed to the spinning class and really going for it. And again, that is spurring me on to make the difference myself as well.
Good. That is all good. My big news of the week. Well, it's not really my big news, but the thing that
I was about to ask you. I mean, I know what the news is, but I'm so delighted you're going to share the big news of the week. Because I was certainly on tenterhooks on your behalf, waiting to hear the outcome. So share your big news.
I appreciate that, cosmic sister. Avi, my husband, found out that he passed his kind of exit exams, his finals. This, not his finals as in like being a student, but like his finals to being a consultant orthopedic surgeon, which is really massive news. The exams have been a huge undertaking, and they've had an impact on all of our lives, if I'm perfectly honest with you. Like for weeks he's been like head down in the book studying whilst also trying to do his job, which is being a surgeon. And it's been pretty full on and hard and a long haul. And he wasn't particularly confident when he came out of the exam as to whether he would have passed it this first time round. So we were like, you know, gearing ourselves up for a potential retake. But actually this is for him and for us, because we've been married for 13 years, but we've been together for basically 20. Like, this is a really massive, huge celebration, a huge achievement. And how I feel, both delighted and thrilled on his behalf, but also kind of delighted and thrilled on my own behalf, because although these are not my choice of words, one of my friends said to me that in many ways I'm like the scaffolding that has been propping things up to enable him to do what he needs to do. And I don't think that that is an overstatement. There have been times where that is exactly the role that I have had to play in order to facilitate this happening, whilst also trying to, you know, progress my own career and looking after three young children and dealing with, you know, all the other life shit that everybody else has to deal with. But anyway, it's really massive, very, very well deserved, and a big achievement. And what was really lovely is that he happened to have the day off when he found out that he got his exams. So we had a bottle of Prosecco at lunchtime, which, let's face it, is the dream, which I didn't tell any of my colleagues about when I then rejoined my afternoon meetings in a very buoyant mood. Just
brilliant.
Yeah, like, yes, I am actually drunk at lunch. And it reminded me to the good old days when I was in like my early 20s, when I was like first started working in the city, where I used to go out for boozy lunches. And I remember at the beginning of those days, I don't know if you ever had this, but I went out for my first boozy lunches when I was like newly in the workplace. And people used to then go back to the office and carry on working. And I would just be like, oh my Lord. Usually if you were to drink during the day, you'd need to have a nap or just carry on drinking through to the evening, because the day was effectively over. So I have actually lost a little, I'd built up some resistance to lunchtime drinking and some hardiness, which has subsequently been massively lost. So it was quite a funny afternoon that preceded the announcement or the email that he got through. But anyway, it's massively lifted spirits, huge things to celebrate. So my daily check-in is that I'm feeling fantastic on his behalf, on my family's behalf, on just everything. It's really great.
That's such lovely news. I'm delighted on Abby's behalf, but also on your behalf too, because I know the commitment that is required from everyone. It's been a real team effort to facilitate, enable him to do all the exams and make it happen. It's, you know, for all those people working in our health service on the front line, you know, it's a massive, massive slog.
Yeah, absolutely. It seems like a very good time to remind ourselves of everything they've had to go through. And we do need to remind ourselves, because actually as things move towards feeling more positive and energetic and back to normal, it's very amazing how quickly we forget, right? But there are some
sure.
But it's been a huge slog for a lot of people.
Yeah. And we often have short term memories, but you know, I hope that we never forget clapping for our NHS, and that, you know, that kind of appreciation continues even when the pandemic has subsided.
As we mentioned earlier, we're not having a chat with anyone outside of ourselves, but there are some, I think, reflections to be had on this time and what it's all meant. And one of the reasons why, when we were first discussing why we wanted to do a podcast and what would be the value of it, was very much kind of looking at this issue and seeing it amongst ourselves and amongst our female peers and people that we know, around the unbalanced impact or the extra impact that the pandemic had on women, and how women have ended up taking on the main brunt of the burden of some of the things that have happened over the last year. Well, it's a bit longer than a year now, hasn't it? It's only 13, 14 months. And certainly that has come out in a lot of the conversations that we've had over the past few weeks, and in a lot of the conversations that you and I have had. And I was prompted to think about it again when I went to vote in the local, well, for me in London, I could vote for London mayor elections and general assembly. But there were other elections going on up and down the country. And it did just re-prompt some of the thoughts around some of the earlier conversations we'd had around women in leadership roles, around some of this extra impact taking its toll on women. Because actually, if you look at the seats around the top table when decision making was being made in the depths of the crisis, and actually at every subsequent point since, the female leadership voice, certainly in our national politics, might not be true in other countries, but generally has been governed by men.
Yeah, we've seen there was an analysis done, and like, you know, less than 10% of the voices that we've heard in the daily press conferences from Downing Street have been women's voices, you know, women's faces, women's representation. And certainly there's been many studies conducted across the world about kind of the quality of public policy that, you know, and ultimately, like, you know, how do we ensure that we're coming up with solutions that speak to everyone? It's when you've got the variety and diversity of people around the table to contribute to the problem solving and to making those changes. So, you know, I do think we are poorer, not financially, but kind of in terms of diversity and richness by not having that representation. I think it's worth kind of just flagging in the course of this conversation that we are talking before we know the outcomes of the elections. The votes are literally being counted as we speak right across the country. But I was particularly struck as someone who back in 2016 put themselves forward to be for the candidates, to try and secure the candidacy of a Metro Mayor position. I wasn't successful, but I was the only woman at the time that was going forward just to even be selected as the candidate, and like really striking to see, with 5 years later, like just kind of like the lack of women putting themselves forward. And connecting that to some of the conversations that we've had, everyone's busy, but people that are having to combine their work with any sort of caring responsibilities, not just for children but for parents or partners, we know from the conversations we've had anecdotally, we know from studies that have already taken place, I know from the work that I do with the Maternal Mental Health Alliance, it's disproportionately falling on women. So it's therefore no surprise that fewer women are inclined to put themselves forward. And then you layer on top of that, if we reflect on the conversation we had with Shayi from Glitch, again, about the disproportionate amount of abuse that women are then subject to when they put themselves forward, it just kind of, in my mind, just kind of really reinforces why we've still got the distance to make and why it should be like all of our concerted effort to try and do everything possible to improve the landscape and to support and encourage women and give them the tools and the confidence to put themselves forward. So we don't yet have another election where, we are really searching to see those women's names on the ballot paper. I don't want to get to that moment. I want to be in a place where we have women at all levels, be that at local level or national level, putting themselves forward so that we've got that representation, so that when we're back in national crises, we have women sat around the cabinet table contributing to the policy formation and what to do, respond to and say and do in times of crisis, so we have a better outcome for the country.
Absolutely. And I think there are people who will deny the fact that the consequence of some of the policy that was created and the people who created it, it's then the two aren't really connected from a gender perspective. It's not really relevant because they're dealing through a national crisis and what difference it make. But for myself, I find it absolutely impossible to believe that there isn't some connection between the fact that it was a male prime minister, a male health secretary, male lead scientists, kind of basically across the board deciding on our response to the pandemic. And then you look at study after study from the ONS, from the Fabian Women's Society, everyone has like put out reports which is substantiated with evidence around how more women have been furloughed, more women are likely to have lost their jobs, more women have taken on homeschooling and caring responsibilities and had to do this balance and this struggle. I just don't think it's possible for me to disconnect the two. The how policy was created and what some of the outcomes of those policy were, stripping aside some of the health issues, which of course we were dealing with for the first time, but slightly parking that and just staying focused on this issue. And actually, one of the things that I've been lamenting about recently is that I feel genuinely saddened by the fact that Angela Merkel's time is coming to an end, as I really feel as like a kind of titan of female leadership across the continent. Obviously, we've left Europe, which is, we could go off on that tangent, but we probably shouldn't for everyone's sanity. But that's absolutely something that I also find, and we don't know who's going to take over and whatever, so I make no judgment about the future, but it just feels like another thing, isn't it, that kind of female powerhouse is gone. And then you look at the kind of global leadership who is going to have to steer us out of the impact of the pandemic, economic recovery, climate change, which we can go on and talk about as well. And it's that who are the key decision makers, who is driving forward some of these absolutely like paradigm shifts, changes to the whole structure of our world to accommodate what comes next. And it poses, I think, a real question. Are there the right voices, that diversity of opinion, perspective, talent, across the kind of global leadership platforms that we are all going to be so hugely reliant on in ways that we haven't even thought about?
Indeed. For me, also raises an even more philosophical question about the kind of the wider public support for democracy. And I say that in terms of, looking at levels of participation and engagement. We don't know all the numbers, but certainly if we just look at what happened, there was a by-election and that we do have the result of today. And it was, the turnout was 42.55%. And, you know, I've worked on a by-election. I should say that, you know, this is the first time in over 15 years that I haven't worked on an election. So it was a bit unusual for me yesterday just to go along and vote and not actually, you know, be involved in campaigning. But separate to that, you know, looking at turnouts, you know, it's not just about the quality of decision making and the quality of policy and, you know, and the choices that are made on a country's behalf. But I think it's also important that if people don't see someone that they identify with or that they relate to, that is making decisions on their behalf, then, you know, again, the dinner I was at last night with some friends that, you know, not involved in politics, you know, they just talked about the kind of their level of disillusionment. And my worry is, you know, like, what depths could that sink to? And we're not doing more to encourage a diversity of engagement and participation and representation, then that also doesn't bode well for the wider engagement of the public in our political processes and kind of wider support for democracy. So do you worry that we ignore this stuff at our peril?
It's interesting you should say that about your dinner last night, because I also went out for drinks last night with friends. And just as like a very small sample size straw poll, I just happened to mention, I was like, oh, did anyone vote today? And they all said, no, didn't vote today.
Yeah.
One person didn't have time. The other two were just like, no, I'm not sure they wanted to admit it to me publicly, but I'm not sure they even knew that there was necessarily a poll taking place that they could have got involved with. And the conversation swiftly moved on because it wasn't my interest to hold them to account. I didn't care. It was just as a point of interest. And yeah, you know, these are not... these are, you know, you're educated, engaged, newspaper reading, bright women who all have skin in the game, because we all do in any thriving democracy. But it just was like, yeah, no, I didn't vote.
No one had voted at my dinner either.
And I only voted because I won't miss a vote. I didn't vote with the passion and the excitement of a polling day, usually, where I'm never as closely as you, but the last time that when we did vote, which was voting for you after I had help with your campaign in the last election, you know, like, I usually go to the polls with proper anticipation, angst, excitement, like, this is me fulfilling my democratic duty. And, you know, I was like to hanger on about, you know, the suffragettes died so that we could have this vote and I'm not going to not use it. And I still went, and I would never miss a vote beyond some really extenuating circumstances. But for what? I didn't feel motivated. It was more something that I had to try and fit in amongst one of my various school pickups before the swimming run.
And whether that's a reflection again of like just the fatigue that people feel just more generally in the malaise, you know, because of the extraordinary circumstances of coming out of a pandemic, or whether it's, you know, points to kind of a wider systemic challenge of what people described to me last night as this disillusionment, this kind of just like, how is this relevant to me? I don't know who these people are. What are they going to do on my behalf? You know, people just not having any understanding or connection to it. You can't take it as a God-given right. Like, I think it's also incumbent on people who are in positions of leadership and power to make the case for the role that they are carrying out. And I don't think we've seen very much of that, particularly over the course of the past year.
No. And actually, this sort of slightly moves the conversation on. It's sort of in a little bit into the territory of some of the stuff that sees us through. But one of the things that I tend to do is, I don't have that much time, and we discussed this before, I don't have that much time to read. So when I find something interesting to read, like a magazine or a supplement in a newspaper, I mean, I've literally got some like Saturday Times or you know, old magazines knocking around that I will not throw away because I just want to finish reading them. And one of them...
I've got the same pile myself of articles that I've ripped out. So I, you know, I've gone as far as sort of keeping the magazine. I was like, I can get rid of the magazine, I'm going to hold on to these articles, I'm going to read them. And I've got about 10 of them by my bedside table.
So this one came, exactly the same. And occasionally, like sometimes after 6 months, it'll be like, do you know what, I'm really not going to read this. But anyway, I have a subscription to Time magazine, which I don't know why, but I'm actually holding up to show Luciana as if it's like a show and tell in a classroom, because she can see me on screen. Anyway, I had it, and it's called Climate is Everything and How the Pandemic Can Lead Us to a Better, Greener World. And it's a couple of weeks old already, but I decided one evening this week, rather than watching TV, I was like, do you know what, I'm just actually going to bloody read it. It's been by my bed now for a few days. I'm going to pick it up and read it. And one of the things that they talk about is, again, around this point around female leadership and how it's focused, obviously, it's very much on American politics. It's an American publication, although they do some stuff around the globe as well. But they're looking at some of the fiscal stimulus that Biden has put in, and how one of the big step changes that comes with this fiscal stimulus is wherever it's going, to whatever department to decide on whatever public policy, it has to be delivered through a climate change lens. So whether it be transport, whether it be house building, whether it be the treasury, it doesn't matter. Every investment decision, every structural change has got to be delivered through a climate change lens, because actually the protection of our planet is just no longer a peripheral debate. It's no longer a kind of nice to have if you've got the time to think about it. It's central, fundamental to everything. But again, they go on and make the point that actually, when you look at some of the impacts on climate changes on some of the poorer countries in the world, they disproportionately impact women. Women are likely to be in a lot of the industries and sectors that are going to be impacted by some of the changes that climate change brings. So when you are looking at how you are going to restructure our economies and restructure our public health, public policy, it doesn't matter which arena, you have to have that female leadership voice around the table, which is going back to the earlier point. If you're going to carve it, you're going to create this structure, and it really needs to be a new world order in a way that is also going to be good for everybody on the planet, and that is going to be seen through a perspective that is really, you know, accommodating 50% of the population.
Yes.
I just thought I would share that, because it was also the magazine is sitting next to me, so I was prompted to say it.
And it's great to hear, particularly the USA now seeking to take that leadership position when it comes to climate change, and considering like all the decisions it makes through the lens of like, you know, what impact would it have on our nation, our global climate system, and that's really positive. I'd like to see that also incorporate health. I say that as someone who's very passionate about our health. As nations individually and collectively as a planet, a lot of that is interconnected with climate change. But we still, not just in our country, but in so many countries, have systems that are geared to what we do to treat people when they're sick, rather than what we can all be doing either individually or collectively to keep ourselves well. And again, because the burdens disproportionately fall on women when we're contending with illness or children, whatever it is, every single element of the life, you know, the life cycle at every stage. And I just hope that we'll kind of see this kind of, particularly in the wake of the pandemic, more of a focus on prevention and real prevention, not that kind of prevention when you think about it in the context of health, but actually from education through to like how we design our cities and our towns, through to our transport systems. Again, a lot of interconnectivity with climate change, but how can we ensure that, you know, any investment that's made is done so with a perspective of keeping people well? That's my hobby horse. That's my kind of passion. And
I mean, it's a worthwhile one. I mean, it's like, it's not really lowering the tone, but connected to this, I was thinking about this week, because like, I'm desperate to book a holiday. Obviously, one of the big benefits of this pandemic has been that when we've all been out walking in the woods, we haven't heard aeroplanes. You can kind of cross the streets with ease. People have stopped using transport in the way that they were because they have not been able to. And that's obviously been positive for our climate, for our immediate environment, for air quality, you know, the whole raft of things. And then I'm thinking, like, as an individual consumer, what's my responsibility? Can I book a holiday which requires me getting on an aeroplane because I'm just desperate to sit by a beach in sunny shores because I feel that that's what I need? And how do I reconcile that need and also that expectation of life, right? Because that's just what I've done previously. I've grown up, we all have, in this very consumerist, anything is possible, go on holidays once, twice, if you're lucky, three times a year, whatever, you know. So it's just kind of almost like inbuilt into the way we as humans now function, that expectation of a break and what that break might look like. Am I going to not go on holiday? Am I going to bring my kids up thinking that actually we're not really going to travel abroad because that's us making our own small impact into the way we go about doing things? Or am I going to take them on holiday because actually that's just something that I really want to do? And I know it sounds so shallow, but this is the thought I was having about, and you know, I'm an individual, so yes, we are all individuals. It doesn't matter where I land on this as a decision, except for the fact that all our collective action on all of these kind of things is so hugely important. So there is an individual responsibility, because your individual responsibility ladders up to a societal one, to a community one, to a global one.
Yeah.
And we all have to play our role.
Let me tell you, it's like as a positive. So when I was, sounds so fancy. When I was the Shadow Minister for Energy and Climate Change, let me tell you,
Rebecca, fancy, but you own that fancy title because it's a good one.
Yes. When I was in that role, my specialist subject area was algae biofuels. Now, you may ask me what on earth is an algae biofuel and why on earth is it relevant to this conversation? Algae biofuels are fuels that are created on arid land, so not on land that would otherwise be used for food production, which is very important when we think about the increasing population of our planet. And algae biofuels are really important because they're being developed, hopefully, to massively reduce aviation emissions, in order to, you know, be able to fly planes, but do so with a fuel that doesn't really impact on our planet. So I share that with you as kind of, you know, certainly in the short term, I think, you know, that there's many people, myself included, like making decisions about limiting international travel because we don't want to be getting on planes. And I do think there'll be increasing public pressure to make it, you know, make it that we all contribute if that is the choices that people make. But I am looking forward, I hope, to a moment in the not so distant future when actually we will be able to fly and do so in a way that doesn't have a massive detrimental impact on our climate, right? Because it will reduce our emissions.
Yes, like electrical cars as well.
Yes.
Or hoverboards. I mean, again, just to lower the tone, but whenever we talk about electrical cars or anything like that, it always makes me think of Back to the Future, which, by the way, is one of my favorite trilogies of all time. And I should say that I have watched during the pandemic, because one of the things that has been afforded to us during lockdown is you're allowed to just watch a bit of rubbish telly. And literally, Back to the Future is one of the best trilogies ever. But anyway, the hoverboard.
Don't joke. Don't laugh. Like, it's not just like a thing of the films. I was listening to
science fiction.
It's not just science fiction. I was listening to what we've already discussed on this show, one of my favorite podcasts, which is the FT podcast, which is discussing air taxis. Looking at
how cool is that?
Travel that goes like in the air. So let's not just think about it as some sort of abstract science fiction concoction.
This 100% not. Steven Spielberg was all over this stuff in the late 80s or early, yeah, probably would have been the late 80s when he was writing Back to the Future 2, which is so brilliant. It's just such a stroke of genius. But he called it, right? The way we're going to be flying through the air. Amazing. Can't wait.
I feel in this conversation, you are advocating there's a recommendation that people should go back and revisit some of those fantastic Spielberg films, including Back to the Future. Have you got any other top tips or recommendations or things to share with people that have been seeing you through the last week or so since we last connected?
Oh, right. Yes, I do. I do have one more, but it's not really going to be a recommendation because everyone would have done it. But on Saturday night, I had another, I'd like to get out the violins, another single mum Saturday, which was actually like my sixth in a row or something. I realized that because of Bobby's work schedule, and I hadn't put another plan in place. I hadn't made a plan to see anybody, and I put my kids to bed and I was like, oh, right, another Saturday night. What am I going to do? And I was like, and you know what? I'm going to watch a film. I haven't watched a good movie for ages. So I decided to watch A Star Is Born, which I never saw when it came out.
I've never seen it. Oh my goodness, it's amazing.
God, what a great film.
Oh, that's amazing.
And just to go on a very slight tangent, then we can pull it back and start talking about the music. I mean, how fit is Bradley Cooper? I haven't felt that way watching a film about, you know, like when you're younger and you watch a film and you're a teenager and you're just like, oh my God, he's so fit. I love him. I wonder if I'll end up marrying someone in Hollywood. And oh my God, he's so fit. It's amazing. I feel that less and less as I get older. It has to be someone really special. But oh my God, I'm literally watching this film like, is that properly?
It's a heart melt, definitely heart melt.
Oh, beyond. Yeah, I would, is all I'm saying. I just totally would. Anyway, I watched the film. That was what I did. And I'd watch set for, you know, usually watching box sets and I'm on my phone at the same time and, you know, I'm never really like properly focused on anything. I was just like, no, I'm going to sit here on my own. I'm going to watch a movie that I've been planning on watching for ages that I've never seen before that everyone tells me is meant to be very, very good. And I watched it. And it was an absolute pleasure. And I watched it with a bag of honey roasted cashew nuts, which probably meant a half stone in a minute. But it was always round, a very positive way to end what was could have been a fairly miserable Saturday night in. That's all I've got. That and my bottle of Prosecco at lunchtime, which I highly recommend if anyone's got the ability to get involved with that.
Well, so I also had, I wouldn't go as far as say boozy, but I did have like I did go out for a work-related lunch, first time in like, I don't know since when. It was to a Japanese restaurant. We sat in the freezing cold in like a wind tunnel with like this like pokey little lamp, like heat lamp. I mean, it was pointless. It might as well have just been a light rather than a heat lamp. But I did have some hot sake. I don't even know if I'm pronouncing it right. But that was sake? Very nice. Sake. I don't know. I've had it pronounced both ways.
It might be sake.
If anyone listening does know how it's supposed to be pronounced, I can only apologize if I said it incorrectly. That was like just really nice. But yes, you know, I do not have any tolerance really to daytime drinking. So like two of these tiny glasses alone was like, oof, you know, I'm someone that's, yes, in my earlier working days, you know, with like the bravado, yeah, I'm going to drink some like these glasses of wine. Like, you know, I just didn't do that when I was in Parliament for 10 years because I wouldn't be able to have got through like not just the afternoon, but you know, into the late nights. So I avoid it when I can, but it was socially, it wouldn't have been acceptable for me not to indulge in this the hot sake, but and certainly it was welcome, bearing in mind the temperatures that we were having to sit through to enjoy this meal. So that was just like just something I was like, oh, this is something I want to like enjoy, I hope, on another occasion. And then
planning for next week.
There's a few things. In terms of planning, yes, I've sought. Well, I say I've sought. Like for the first time ever, really, I've taken a lot of joy out of planning a trip. I think it's fair to say, like, you know, I took trips for granted before, and now, like, I think I've mentioned that we are going on this trip to Cornwall, and I'm like really taking like time to do like loads of research. Like, I had like some family members and friends who were like, you know, always the kind of go-to people that did the research. That was never me, and now like I'm engaging in like, you know, such detailed research to kind of plan our days, the different beaches we're going to go to. I was like reaching out to people to connect me with people that live in the area to work out like the, you know, the best little like the huts are on the beach that do the sandwiches, or you know, nothing fancy necessarily. I'm going, you know, going with the kids, but we talked a lot today about things to do with the environment and climate change. I'm so excited to, and in fact, I'm waiting on tenterhooks for the tickets to be released for going back to the Eden Project.
The Eden Project.
I went there back in 2005. I was working on a project that was based in Cornwall. I got to go there then. I haven't been there since. So really looking forward to going to see that ecotourism location and waiting for those tickets. But yeah, no, it's actually bringing me a lot of joy in a way that previously never would have done, to kind of painstakingly kind of read all the reviews and have like kind of real detailed day plans for our week that we're going to go spend in Cornwall. So that is,
you know, once you finish making your planning, why don't you type that up and send it over, because I've done no planning about anything forever. The only plan I have put in place, and this is for next week, is that on our birthday, my husband's taking the day off as well, and he was like, we'll go out for lunch. And I was like, yes. And at first he was thinking about going into town. I was like, I don't want to go into town. I don't want to go shopping. I just want to see the sea. So that is what I want to do on my 40th birthday. So hopefully, weather permitting, the only plan I have put in place, I've put in a few other little places for some micro celebrations over the course of the days around my our birthdays. But one of them is that I just want to go and feel a little bit of ocean spray on my face.
Oh, brilliant.
Find it extremely, I find it extremely therapeutic actually being by the ocean. I absolutely love it. But also I find it's very good for that sort of taking a moment and getting perspective and just breathing properly, and that is what I feel will be a good thing to do on my 40th. So that is the plan that I've got.
And obviously the highlight of the day will be when you and I have our morning whiskey before you go into your lunch.
Yes, we're debating this actually, Luciana and I, about how early can you have a whiskey.
I think, listen, you're only 40 once. 40 is a new 30, just to be clear for anyone listening. And if anyone hasn't
said, cannot stress that enough. Okay. Yeah. Just in the avoidance of doubt, 40 is the new 30.
Absolutely. I won't be going to the sea, but I'll be having lunch with my mum also, whose birthday is on the same day. So she and I will be together.
Gosh, birthday twinning. Amazing.
Yeah, so much birthday twinning. And then going for like some meal with my husband at night time. And, you know, it's my moment of life, midlife crisis, where I'm going to get some extra holes pierced in my ears.
I'm actually doing the same, Luciana, on Friday. I'm also going to have another piercing. I'm literally very much in the same place. But I have bought, you should know though, it's seriously about the whole whiskey thing. I have actually bought a new bottle of whiskey that I'm planning on saving for our whiskey drink in the morning. Should I tell you what it is?
That's a really good idea, because I want to ask if there's a present I would like. And actually, that's a really good suggestion, because I would love some Japanese whiskey to enjoy on
Are you telling me that I've already bought you your present?
No,
or is that
you.
Just a general call to action to anyone who might be listening?
Yeah, so anyone would like to send me or Rebecca some whiskey, Japanese or otherwise, of course, we'd be very grateful and it'd be warm.
So I had the other day at someone's house and it was such a lovely bottle. And I was like, well, I've got to buy myself this and I'm going to save it for my birthday. A Belvany 14-year-old Caribbean cask.
Nice. Sounds delicious.
That's what I'm getting. We are going to be getting involved with at 10:30.
Can't wait. Brilliant.
And on that note.
Our 10th episode, less than a week before we reach the milestone that shall not be spoken about, that we've spoken about loads.
Yes. And next time we reconvene, it will be after the event, so we can reflect on what turning 40 has meant to us and how we're coming to terms with it. And hopefully we'll be back for more in the not too distant future. But in the meantime, we will be on social media at the Close Quarters Podcast on Insta.
We love your feedback. Get involved on social media. And we look forward to joining you again very, very soon.